Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show. We're starting right now. Appreciate Chad Simmons from On3 Sports. This is a new venture. Shannon Terry, isn't that the force behind this? Shannon Terry, if you don't know, he is a creator. I will tell you that. And he is creating a new venture, On3 Sports. And there is some premier talent heading over there. And Chad, like I said, y'all know, and we talked about this in the interview, y'all know him, we all do, from recruiting. When I have Chad on, we talk recruiting. Well, he's going to do that with On3 Sports, but it's going to be a lot more. So it's a really exciting venture. And like I said, I'm looking forward to when it launches. It'll be August 15th, so, you know, not quite 2 months out. Coming up in 10, Richard Cross from the Ole Miss sidelines, the official Ole Miss radio broadcast. I want to talk one thing in particular about him with just one idea about Lane Kiffin and Matt Corral and what's going on there. So looking forward to having my friend Richard Cross on. And then bottom of the hour, Neil Blackman going to come on, author, writer, et cetera, talk a little Gators. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. But right now, let me get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football every single day. This is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm pain relief cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
Headline, NCAA investigating Arizona State football for recruiting violations. Oh, Herm. I'm a big Herm Edwards fan, and I just talked 2 weeks ago, I think it was, about how Arizona State, they're winning the South, the Pac-12 South. And they could be conference champs this year for all these reasons, and this is not good stuff. Allegations that during the 14-month, roughly 14-month dead period, Arizona State not only hosted recruits multiple times on campus, but did it with full knowledge that it was against the rules, tried to cover it up, etc., and they've been turned in. So this is just starting, not ending. Headline, former Notre Dame player filling spot on college football playoff selection committee. Rod West, who was a linebacker and a tight end for the Irish late 80s. He's on that the 88 national championship team, one that beat West Virginia on the Fiesta Bowl. He is replacing Raymond Odierno, who is a retired Air Force general who was representing the Air Force Academy, among others, on the playoff committee. Odierno stepping down for health reasons. It's a three-year rotation, and he had filled 2 years of it, and so that's a change we're speaking about. All right, Dana Holgorsen, I don't know how good the team's going to be. This is not bad. Headline. Virginia Tech defensive end transfers to Cougars. Yes, now former Virginia Tech defensive end Justin Beatles, 6'5", 235. Spent one season at Virginia Tech, didn't appear in any games. He was a freshman last year. He will be a freshman this year. Last year, didn't count. Now, he could redshirt this year and then have four more years. I don't believe that's going to happen. He was originally an Arizona State commit. flipped to Virginia Tech, has up to four seasons of actually playing left. So, again, he could redshirt this year, but he is eligible to play immediately. Consider yourself up to date. All right, we will take a quick break. Come back with more college football conversation next.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through hour two on a Thursday. Nine states, 51 sticks, doing it 2 hours every single day. Been doing that since the beginning of the 14 season. Appreciate y'all making that possible. I was expecting California. We talked about this yesterday. Further west you go, the more liberal left, you know, whatever, all those words. I don't care about that. The more it's about water quality, air purity, et cetera. I was like, when California opens, everything's open. I saw 52,000 people at Dodger Stadium the other night, so everything's open. It is not necessarily at this point about so-and-so announced 100% capacity. I've already moved beyond that because it's going to be the exception if anybody says it's not 100%. That's my opinion. It's everything outside the game. You know, Tiger Walk or Dog Walk or whatever your school is, the Grove, for instance. There are some things we do in college football, specifically in the South. It's in addition to, all right, you can tear my ticket and I'm walking through the turnstile. Want to welcome on right now a guy who knows all about that from the sidelines of the Ole Miss radio broadcast and SEC Network, ESPN, et cetera. It's my good buddy Richard Cross. Richard, how are you on this Thursday?
Chuck, I'm great, and I think you're onto something with regard to getting some of the pomp and the circumstance and the pageantry that goes along with college football. There's nobody that tailgates like we do in the Southeast, and then as a subset of that, I think that Ole Miss fancies itself kind of the king of the tailgating scene. So, people are excited about the announcement from a few weeks ago that the Grove would be open as normal. It was so surreal last year. We got to the season and that was great. And I did not think that 25% capacity most places was that weird. I don't know. I just thought it worked okay for college football. But, I mean, we've done the pre- and post-game – well, not the post-game show, but the pre-game show on the Ole Miss Radio Network from the edge of the Grove, kind of a hospitality setup directly across the street, looking into the Grove where, as you were outlining earlier, the Walk of Champions comes across.
So much fun.
You know, the Ole Miss – it's just such a great scene. And even for a game that is not necessarily a marquee game, it's a huge crowd. But then when you get one of those rare Saturdays where you get two teams in the top 25 and, you know, the anticipation level's there and the weather's just right, it's just unlike anything you've ever seen if you've not experienced yourself. And we've always had a front row seat for that. And last year it was a table and a couple of chairs sitting inside the stadium down on the field level in the south end zone. And suffice it to say, that was not exactly the same. In some ways, it made our job a little easier, but I certainly will trade that atmosphere for a little easier for an hour and a half.
Yeah, we're going to talk Rebels, I swear. But, you know, my measuring stick has been, all right, where does it look like 2019? If you saw that party in Starkville over the weekend with Notre Dame in town, all right, it looked like 2019 there. And so if that's any indication, I was like, all right, well, it's going to be 100% and people on top of people. I was like, it's 2019, and that's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, and I mean, I think baseball in the Southeastern Conference, but specifically in the state of Mississippi this year, frankly, was kind of one of the leaders on this whole reopening thing. The governor in Mississippi lifted the attendance restrictions on March 1st. And it took Ole Miss a grand total of one weekend to say, all right, we're on board, ready to go, y'all come.
Sounds good to us.
Yep, absolutely. And I think there were three crowds of more than 11,000 and about half a dozen of more than 10,000 at baseball. Ole Miss hosted a regional two weekends ago, and it was great. Mississippi State, obviously, the last two weekends. I went to Tucson last weekend for the Ole Miss Super Regional for the first couple of games, and I was really impressed with that. I mean, on the Saturday night game, the late game, they had about 7,500 there out in Arizona. So, yeah, we're coming back to life, and thank God for it.
Yeah, and if you'd have gone this time last year, you'd have had to stay 14 days where you could go back home. Continuing with Richard Cross from the Ole Miss sidelines, also SEC Network et al. I want to ask you a question. I have come to the opinion that what Lane Kiffin achieved with Matt Corral last year, and I'm not just talking on field, I think it's one of the biggest storylines going into the SEC in 2021 because he may be the best quarterback in the best league. It was a wrap. There was not really a lot of other scenarios in a lot of people's minds after the 2019 season. Corral, West Coast kid, throw the ball, transfer back. That was going to happen. It not only didn't happen, but Lane turned him into what he was on the field. Talk a little bit about that relationship and how it turned out so far different than what most of us were expecting.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of the whisper was that Oregon was going to end up as the landing spot for Matt Corral. I mean, this was on the back end of the Matt Luke time at Ole Miss, and he ultimately moves on and is in a good spot at Georgia and is doing good things there, and Ole Miss takes a little bit of a risk, a little bit of a gamble in going out to get Lane Kiffin, and it's been really good. Their relationship is interesting. In fact, Lane Kiffin's relationship with both of his quarterbacks, although we'll see what John Rhys Plumlee is when we get to the fall this year, it appears to be a really good one. The thing that has impressed me with Matt Corral, and you know, we talked last year about the things that he needed to improve, right? Mm-hmm. He needed to improve accuracy, consistency, and you know, judgment. You know, he had to make better decisions on the field. He had to be more accurate with the deep ball, and he had to throw more consistently. Well, he did those things outside of two games last year. I think Lane Kiffin, he's kind of on the little, you know, the rubber chicken circuit right now where they do a few of those, you know, fan booster deals. And somebody asked him, you know, how do you want to see Matt Corral improve this year? He said, well, when we play Arkansas, I hope he doesn't throw it to them six times. You know, in pretty classic Lane Kiffin response there. So there's something there. But in terms of that relationship, I guess what I was going to say, I've talked to Matt a couple of times in the off season. And he has turned into a football sponge. I've always been fairly impressed with kind of his introspection in post-game interviews. You know, we talk to him, and he kind of goes into things that he saw and, you know, what the defense was doing and what they were trying to accomplish. But he talked to me last year throughout the course of the season of Lane being a great play caller because he has this unique ability to look ahead three or four plays or a couple of quarters. He's not just calling plays because he thinks a play is going to work. He's constantly calling stuff to set something up that's either coming later in the game or is coming later in a drive. And I think Matt Corral has really taken advantage of the opportunity to learn from Lane Kiffin and the way he watches a game and the way he calls a game. And he's starting to see things that way as well. Obviously, in terms of success, he's got to eliminate the mistakes. He's got to eliminate the big turnover game. It happened twice last year, right? Yep. It happened against Arkansas and it happened against LSU. Aside from that, he had like three picks all season, and one of them was a tip ball. And I think one of them was like a halftime Hail Mary. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of mistake there outside of those two games. I like what you said about, and I'm not saying this because he's the Ole Miss quarterback. I just happen to agree with you that he's the best quarterback in the SEC, although we know how the voting goes at SEC Media Days. He is not going to be named the preseason first team All-SEC quarterback.
You think that's either the freshman at Alabama or JT Daniels?
Yeah. I think JT Daniels will be the first team All-SEC. I mean, he's the quarterback at Georgia. He's a bigger name. Georgia obviously wins.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Alabama, with a guy having never started a game, considering the kind of numbers that Corral has put up, would beat him out. I tend to think that Corral will be the second team quarterback, but I think based on production, he's better than JT Daniels.
All right, so I have, like everybody, and, you know, you work in college football media, certainly. You know, I have, over the years, developed these little off-season sort of fun mental exercises, and one of them is, all right, who's the second best player on your offense? And I was talking to somebody from Arkansas. I was like, Treylon Burks is, you know, he's one of the best players in the conference, but who's the second best player on your offense? And he's like, I don't know. Some teams, I don't know. With Ole Miss, I know who the second best player is. It's Jerrion Ealy. Cool part is there's like three other guys that I really, really like. Parrish, Drummond, and Sanders.
Yeah. I'm glad that we're on the same page today, because I assume that you were headed down Jerrion Ealy. He just does so many things well. He's an NFL player. He probably doesn't get enough credit for running inside and running physically, because at first glance, you're like, oh, he's not all that big. And you get a little closer to him, you're like, hey, he's bigger than I realized. He's a powerful runner, and he's been able to take some hits. So, yes, I agree with you on that front. Parrish is a really good running back,
yep.
And I think he's going to be a star. I think he's a guy that nobody knows about. Braylon Sanders has got to stay healthy. But look, I mean, there's some opportunity there, right? Elijah Moore is not on the field. And, you know, I don't love the whole how do you replace Elijah Moore conversation, because I don't think you do exactly. Somebody's going to have to pick it up. And generally speaking, Lane Kiffin's offenses are productive. And so who's that production going to come from? A healthy Braylon Sanders, I do think, has a great opportunity there. But you didn't mention one guy. I mean, it's the only guy that anybody wanted to talk about a year ago, but they wanted to talk about him as a quarterback, and he just wasn't going to be a quarterback.
Yeah.
If John Rhys Plumlee goes
center fielder
to the slot and really embraces it, man, the kid can play. He can play. I think he is a pro football player if he is so inclined, just obviously not at the quarterback position.
That's tremendous. That's unbelievable. I said he is the fastest open field player in the conference. You just got to kind of get him out there. Wrapping up with Richard Cross from obviously Ole Miss sidelines, SEC Network, all that. We all talk about Jeff Lebby, and he and, you know, Lane work together on the offense. It's not just Lane on that play sheet that's flying through the air. Talk about Dirk and Chris Partridge a little bit. Talk about the defense and just that relationship. And we got about a minute and a half, so you can run with it a little bit. But just because everybody talks about Lebby, we never talk about the coordinators on the other side.
Yeah, those two guys seem to work together. It's funny. I think Partridge is involved in some of the and you wouldn't necessarily think this from a football coach, but he's been involved in some of kind of the branding stuff and really has been impressive in the recruiting process. In addition to his pedigree, I mean, this is a guy that's going to be a defensive coordinator, you know, in the SEC or at the Power 5 level before too terribly long. Look, man, I think DJ Durkin's a really good football coach, and, you know, say what you want to about what happened at Maryland. I've gotten to know him a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. And I think he's a really good guy too. And when you have a story that is as tragic as it was at Maryland, there's always going to be a scapegoat. And, you know, does he wish he had done things differently? Does he probably hold some responsibility? Of course, there's no question about that. But that was, I think, some of the way that he was portrayed in all of that was unfortunate when it was all said and done. Here's what I'll say, though. DJ was really pleased with how the defense went through the spring. You know, they got a bunch of new guys coming in. Many of them were there for spring practice. I talked to him after the spring game, and he said, man, we had a really good spring. And I asked him about three down linemen versus four down linemen, and, you know, personnel. He didn't really want to go down that road. He said, look, we're going to have the ability to be multiple and to do some things that we couldn't do in the past. you know, whether that's three down or four down, I think they're probably going to go this three down lineman route thing. And I think they're going to be better. I mean, are they going to be top three in the SEC? No. But if they can middle of the pack to, you know, not at the bottom of the SEC, not only in a single year, but historically, then that is massive progress for that side of the ball.
Richard Cross, talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, bud.
All right, Richard Cross again from SEC Network, et cetera. And I'm looking forward to the tailgate and coming back. There's nothing better when you're walking to the game. Like, I'm covering the game. I'm serious. I'm media. But, my goodness, the tailgating in the South. And I got to tell, I'm sure there are exceptions. I know that. Most times, fans, doesn't matter which team you're rooting for. I mean, somebody's got a candelabra. The next tent, they got chicken wings. It's just the best thing going, and there was a virtual absence of it the entire season, so I'm happy it's back.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Weird thing about the UF receiver core, my favorite kid in that group is this giant human named Justin Shorter, and he's like 6'5", 230, 225 something. He's an athlete, but he's a much, much bigger kid than your average receiver, and he is words like, you know, red zone nightmare, matchup, you know, short yardage, you know, conversion guy, whatever. He's segmented. I love his potential. Here's the weird thing. Virtually everybody else playing receiver in Gainesville right now got smoke coming off their cleats. I mean, just it's a trap. And I know who they lost. Two first rounders at the skill positions, plus Kyle Trask. It's a track team out there. I want to head out now from Saturday Down South. I want to welcome on Neil Blackman. Neil, how are you today, man?
Good, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate you making some time. First of all, talk about my favorite out of the group, Justin Shorter, because I look at, like, it just looks right. Like, I know it's going to turn into, like, eight touchdowns this fall. Talk about Justin Shorter's game. Obviously, former five-star, transferred down from Penn State and has already been on the field and produced.
Yeah, I mean, he has, and he's huge because, you know, the big thing about Florida last year was they were just so efficient in the red zone, and, of course, it's easy to be efficient in the red zone when you can throw it up to Kyle Pitts, right? Or you can throw it up to even Trayvon Grimes was pretty lethal down there. And Justin's got to step up and fill that void. He's going to be the guy when they're inside the 20s. And I think, you know, I think he's capable of that. He's also just drastically improved as a route runner since he arrived in Gainesville. And Dan has even back his Miss State days and as OC at Florida. He loves those big receivers that he can run out on intermediate routes, just can – out physical corners, and Shorter is that guy.
All right, there are there are a lot of times people mispronounce a kid's name. They call him X Xavier, and I'm like, no. In the case of Xavier Henderson, I think that's actually how you say it. Talk about him, Jamarcus Weston, some of the other flyers out there, because that's what's got me excited. You lose a whole lot of like talented, productive, proven guys, but they've just got flyers.
Yeah, they got guys all over the place that can really run. Xavier Henderson, Chris Henderson's little brother, obviously Chris Henderson, All-American at Florida, defensive back.
Yeah.
And Xavier is just a faster version, which is hard to believe if you saw Chris's 40 time at the combine. But that's Xavier Henderson. They really want to get him improved in terms of his route running. But as far as like the flyer goes, and the vertical threat, he is that. He's even faster than Tyree Cleveland, who was a very good vertical threat for Florida early in the Mullen era. Jacob Copeland, been in the program a long time, can really run. Can he catch the ball consistently? Another huge recruiting win. Jamarcus Weston, a guy you mentioned that they're really excited about. They think he's that Kadarius Toney type, all-purpose, jack-of-all-trades, diamond in the rough that they found. He's going to play. Another guy that not a lot of people have mentioned that isn't as fast is Trent Whittemore. But, he is just so big and so good at getting open. A little bit like Freddie Swain in terms of his size. And I think a guy that should have a pretty productive season for Florida as well.
And when you talk about speed, I mean, I'm, really intrigued to see this kid be healthy and right and in an offense and get the football. DeMarcus Bowman, the Florida kid who was at Clemson for like 15 minutes and decided, I'm going to go back home. And he's eligible. And was it a knee or an ankle or something that he was coming back from? Or a shoulder? He had something in spring, if I'm remembering correctly. But talk about his potential for 21.
Yeah, dealing with the leg in the spring. Florida's adopted the Nick Saban approach of just identifying the body part and not the actual
lower extremity
and not the actual injury. But yeah, I mean, he's a guy that everybody wanted, and he did decide to come home. He's and just one of two five-star transfers. Lorenzo Lingard is in the program too and is healthy. Another guy that was dealing with the lower extremity, probably faster than Bowman. Lingard. So, like you said, just a lot of dudes that can really run. And we haven't even mentioned Malik Davis and Naquan Wright, who are kind of all purpose guys. Florida has five blue chips in their backfield, which normally when you're talking about a program that's doing that, it's Alabama or Georgia. So that's the way that they're stockpiling talent back there. And it's just really like, who's going to step up and prove it?
All right. I started telling people when they were telling me Kadarius Toney's the next Percy Harvin. I was like, pick somebody else. Don't compare it. Now we're comparing Jacob Copeland. He's the next Kadarius. I'm like, let's stop picking first-round draft picks to compare these kids to. But Jacob Copeland, is he the next the Kadarius position, I guess, the versatile, the motion guy, whatever? Or maybe is that more of a Naquan Wright thing, or is he going to stay in the backfield?
I think Jacob is going to be more of a traditional receiver than Kadarius Toney was, the way that he's been developed. And I think it will be Naquan or Malik Davis, who, of all the Florida running backs, has caught the most passes over the last two seasons. Not quite as dynamic an athlete as some of the other people were talking about, but the staff really likes Malik and the way that he runs routes. Naquan had a really good freshman season, and I think he's a guy that they can line up all over the place as well because he's got great hands. Also, pretty explosive runner. Great first burst.
All right. I want to switch around to defense. I'm going to ask you about personalities. Like, when I ask you about, running back, you can tell me factually he's fast, he's got good hands, he needs to be a better blocker or whatever. I'm going to ask you about some personalities because here's what I have been told, and I'm the biggest Dan Mullen fan you will ever find. I have been told consistently he ain't easy to work with. Now, I do know a little bit about Todd Grantham, and I know he digs in, and he's got one way, and it's his way. How do those two get along so well? Like, because they're boys. I mean, everybody tells me, oh, no, Grantham's protected. He ain't going to get fired, whatever. Their personalities, I mean, how does that work?
I think it's not Charlie Strong and Urban Meyer where there was that different dynamic, and one was, it's the opposite. So it's a great question, but the way I explain it is it's the way that Urban and Dan got along. Those guys are just deeply intense, fiercely competitive guys. And, you could argue till you're blue in the face about whose offense it was, but at the end of the day, it worked. And I just think that that's the working relationship that Dan and Todd had. And what Dan will tell you is, hey, three of the 4 years I've had Todd Grantham as my defensive coordinator, I've had a really good defense.
All right. And go ahead. I'm sorry. Last thing I want to ask you for, if you dropped like a, because I want to ask you about the coordinator on the other side. If you dropped like 100 Florida fans into a group and like just 100, even SEC fans, Southern fans, what number from each group would be able to just factually say who the offensive coordinator is?
You know, with SEC fans, I bet you 90 of them would say it's Dan Mullen.
I absolutely agree. Do Florida fans know who they are?
Probably 70, and you'd have to find the 30. You know, you'd find the 30 who know who the offensive coordinator is for sure. They're all on Twitter.
Exactly. Let me ask you then about take it to the next level, because, you know, like when Jimbo's the head coach and you're the OC, Jimbo, it's Jimbo's show. You're along for the ride. With Nick Saban, it's not so. When you're the DC, game day, you're running. So every coach is a little different despite what we think about it. So you're correct, and I agree with you. Everybody say, oh, Dan Mullen's the OC. There are two, Billy Gonzalez and John Hevesy. What do they do? What is the breakdown of the responsibilities? And I'm talking whether it's during the week, game day, or whatever, because I know what I think is it's 90% Dan Mullen, but they do have coordinators.
Yeah, I think Billy has more to do with what happens during the week from a preparation standpoint than John Hevesy does. I think John Hevesy, it's more of a title, and you've been with me forever, and here's the title that you've earned. And just develop players because we know you don't recruit anybody. Billy recruits, and I think he plays a big role in being kind of a passing game coordinator. But that's really what it is, and I do think it's Dan's offense. With Brian Johnson, of course, it was a lot different. That's why the NFL is banging down his door.
And I wanted to ask you about that because I was also told, like, you watch that offense, that Johnson is the one who has been nudging or pushing or whatever Dan towards more of the passing game, and that was at least part of the pie in Kyle Trask's 2020 season. Is there anybody else on that coaching staff that has enough bells to kind of nudge or push or shove Dan Mullen towards the passing game more?
No, and in fact, I think it's the opposite. I think that John, and I just said he doesn't – I don't know how much he does during the week, but I think that John Hevesy and Greg Knox, the running backs coach, probably are going to push Dan towards getting back to his sort of power run game that we all knew about this season. Now, I don't think Dan needs to be told to do that. He's great at adapting for his personnel, but I would agree that Brian was instrumental in opening it up. And I also think – as great a quarterback developer as Dan is, Chuck, I don't know, like, that's an interesting question about Brian Johnson is an elite young talent as a coach, and Florida may miss him. He was the guy with Emory Jones the last 3 years.
Neil Blackman from Saturday Down South, I don't believe we've had you on before. We will do it again soon, brother. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Chuck. Really good time. Appreciate it.
All right, Neil Blackman again from SaturdayDownSouth.com. Dan, we had Neil on before? No? All right, Dan's waving hands and saying no. All right, we need, that's good stuff. And so I talked about that when – who hired him? The Eagles, I think, Brian Johnson? And when that happened, I was like, uh-oh. Because, you know, the reason I asked those questions, 100 Florida fans, and he said like 70 of them could say Billy Gonzalez or Hevesy. But he said SEC fan, I think it would be single digits. They would all say Dan Mullen. And well, what does Dan Mullen do? Offense. Well, kidding. He's an offensive-minded head coach, and he's play caller, and he's Dak Prescott, and so we know that. But what about the offense? It's not flinging it around creation like it was last year. We've covered that. When Brian Johnson left, I was like, I wonder if there's good – because at least you had to – I can't believe I'm saying this. It's just not how you win anymore. No, I mean, it's not how you win titles. Run the ball and play defense. I would love to give a seminar. Like, you know what I want to put – on like thepodcastpark.com, Chuck Oliver Show. That's where you go and you click on it and you can subscribe and you get it every day. You know what I want to put on there? Like my Chuck Oliver How You Win College Football Philosophical Series. And for like the first 135 years of the sport, run the ball and play defense. Field position, wear down the other guy, etc. Please. That is not how you – not titles. That is how you can almost guarantee between an offensive run, power, run base, maybe misdirection, double wing, whatever, do whatever you want, but from an overtly ground-based power running attack, and if you schedule correctly, I don't care where you are. Kansas? There's no. If Kansas decided to just not even pretend they were going to compete, and they said triple option, here we come, wing T, full house T, single wing, direct snap, whatever. We're gonna run the Notre Dame box. Go Google that. That's a great offense. Between scheduling and playing that kind of offense, you could guarantee two things. You'll never win a conference championship. You will go to a bowl. But Kansas is like, we're going to go to the Orange Bowl and win 10 games again. We're going to win the Big 10 or Big 12 conference championship. I'm like, no, you're not. You're not going to do that. Yes, we are. So they line up and run pro set and spread and whatever. You know what? Just weird it up. That's all you got to do. Weird it up and schedule correctly. Do you know right now, give me a high school in Houston that plays football.
Lamar
High School in Houston, Texas. There's an option quarterback there right now. I don't know if there is. He's got 27 scholarship offers. 26 of them say, we see you as a slot receiver. Who was it, Russell Shepard? Wasn't he an option quarterback out of Houston?
Yeah, he was. I believe Cy Fair High School.
Carl Crawford.
Yes.
Option quarterback out of Houston. There are places, folks. I don't know how it holds, but Houston for running backs and option quarterbacks, linebackers too. There's an option quarterback that has 27 scholarship offers, and he's a four-star, and he's a stud. 26 of those offers say we see you as a slot receiver, a corner, maybe a big safety if you're a physical guy. Be Kansas. I see you as a starting quarterback in Power 5 football, playing in Austin, Texas, beating the Longhorns. Get weird, man. You don't win titles, even at Florida. The talent that Dan Mullen and that staff will bring to the UF program, that's just not how it's going to be, man. It's not. So I don't know who the coach on that staff is to nudge him more aggressive downfield like it was last year. But, I mean, I just asked Neil, and he's like, actually, Chuck, I think it's going to go the other way. Hevesy's the offensive line coach, right? I don't remember a lot of offensive line coaches saying, key to victory, throwing a ball. It'll be they'll be good. They'll be good. I don't know if they're Jacksonville good, but they'll be good. But it's just going to be way different. I'm going to tell you, the less different it is, might be the better.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
The games that are going to be played on campus, the revenue is not going to stay with the campus. It will go into the college football playoff coffers. And so there won't be any local revenue from that other than perhaps parking and concessions and things like that.
Normally I just tell you who that was. I'm going to tell you who that was and what he actually was saying. That is Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby on SiriusXM saying, "Hi, I'm Bob Bowlesby. I think you're stupid." Bob Bowlesby asked about the advantage for seeds 5, 6, 7, and 8 hosting an on-campus first-round play. When would that be, Dan, by the way? Like, I don't know, December 22nd? Or
That's my guess. I mean, a week or two after Championship Saturday. You got to have it pretty quick.
And so on December 29th? I mean, I don't know when it's going to be. But whenever it is, December 22nd, it's supposed to be a couple of Saturdays after, you're right, Championship Saturday. So he says it won't be an advantage to have the game on. Financially, it won't be. That's not true, first of all. Access to tickets, that's increased donations. Plus, there is parking and concessions. And when you are, I don't know, what's Daryl Royal sit? How many get there?
I think they're above 100,000.
100,000 people. That's a lot of parking and concessions. But I just want in Texas, that wouldn't, because that fan base, and maybe most fan bases, I don't know. But if you're a playoff team and you've got a, quote, home game on December 22nd, there ain't no students on campus. I mean, is everybody driving back just for – people do it for a regular season game anyway, and there's only 10,000 students. Maybe. But you've also never had a – in fact, I dare say there's never been a college football game. I'm just picking a date. December 22nd, anybody ever played a home game on December 22nd? I wouldn't guess so. But Bob Bowlesby saying, because he was asked about the advantage. Well, no, there is no advantage compared to being seeds 1, 2, 3, or 4. No, because you're playing and they're not. But saying the financial advantage being the home team versus the away team, I need to see. First place my mind went, and I don't know the answer, folks. I'm telling you that up front. First place my mind went was, what about access to tickets? Because I have fans of various programs. And I don't know why this started, but I'd like to read them on the air just because I like the different I like to see the different levels. Whenever a team makes a conference championship game, for instance, and certainly with bowls, but that's been going on for decades, I'll have folks, fans of whatever the team is, just randomly, "Hey, I got this email from my athletic director today. If you want to join us in Charlotte for the ACC title game, see your Hokies take on Clemson, and here's the price for the tickets." Do you know, and so Virginia Tech fans, for instance, maybe they would fill it up. I don't know. But I remember seeing it. Like, Georgia Tech played Florida State there in the 13 season. A tarp up. They didn't sell all the tickets. So in that case, no advantage. When you get those games on campus, yeah, it's an advantage financially. You have to pay for access to tickets. Now, again, like Georgia Tech, Florida State game, I don't think anybody really wanted access. The Alabama, Georgia SEC championship game, I get those emails sent to me as well. Do you know what they say? Is it the Hartman Fund at Georgia? And I think it's Tide Pride at Alabama. Everybody got there. Their own little, you know, fundraising wing. And the email comes and says, "Hey, join us in Charlotte this Saturday if it really is a game you want to be at. Join us in Atlanta if it really is a game. Join us for the bowl game. Join us." You get access to tickets through donations. Plus, like Dan said, 100,000 on campus in Austin, Texas? That's a lot of Diet Cokes. Dan, what's up?
believe it's the McGill Society at Georgia, after Dan McGill.
Oh, what's the Hartman Fund?
Who knows? There's so many different.
I'm not an alum.
Fundraising.
Oh, they'll give
there.
You a lot of different choices on how to give them money.
Oh, yeah. The most important is the last part you just said right there is the money. Sight Unseen, I haven't read it yet, but Dennis Dodd just did a piece on CBSSports.com about Bill O'Brien going to Alabama. And, of course, too, that is after he just talked with Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian about what does the coaching rehabilitation program look like. And this one with Bill O'Brien, I would say sight unseen, and again, if this is in there, it's just purely coincidental because I haven't read it. This is going to be Nick Saban's most impressive if he is able to change the perception of Bill O'Brien. Because, Chuck, what do we think of a Bill O'Brien? Yelling at Tom Brady? Telling a fan to go blank themselves, walking off the field with the Texans and being caught on video. And also, too, being thought of as being such a boob that he ran an organization into the ground with not only his offensive decisions, but also his personnel decisions. Of all the things, Lane Kiffin, goofiness. Steve Sarkisian, personal demons. This one, he's got to really tell people, hey, this guy isn't as much of a wild card as you think.
It's a very good point to make. I absolutely agree with you. Good stuff there. Dan, David, appreciate you on the ones and twos. Everybody listening, thank you all for getting in. The guest as well. Again, thepodcastpark.com. Click subscribe. It's going to show up every single day. 22 hours. Recharge those batteries. Promise. Be back tomorrow with more college football conversation right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.